If you would turn to 1 Timothy chapter 4. Tonight's lesson is aimed at young people. Who's a young person? Somebody younger than me. That's the definition I use. So if you're younger than me, you're young. That seems like it's always the definition of a young person for people. It's kind of a variable. But being young is not a bad thing. Being young is a good thing in a lot of ways. It's an exciting time. It's kind of a scary time sometimes. It's stressful. I know from experience now watching my young people come along that one of the things people are always curious about is, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go to school? What are you going to be when you grow up? And sometimes you don't know what you're going to do, where you're going to go. And it's, you know, but that's what people kind of hound you with. I'm sure you guys can confirm that people are always curious about that and ask it. And as a young person, you want to know, what is my life going to be like? It's hard to even imagine. What's life going to be like? Where will I live? What will I do? What kind of career will I have? Who will I marry? What kind of house will I live in? You just sort of can't picture that. Now, for the older folks, we've sort of got it figured out. You kind of see where it brought you. Doesn't mean it won't change, but at least you have an idea of what life is like as, you know, as a grown up with a family. But as a young person, you're kind of looking, the whole future is just this big question mark. What lies ahead and down the road? But one thing I would like to say to you is that you can decide, one, the most important thing right now, you can take control of, and you can say, I don't know a lot of things, but I can determine as of today, I'm choosing that I'm going to be a devout Christian. And that is something that you don't have to wait to see how life turns out. It doesn't really matter in that case where you end up working, what state you live in, what kind of house you have, what kind of job you have is all, you know, beside the point when it comes to determining I'm going to be a Christian. I'm going to follow the Lord. I was down at Eastside in Athens recently, and we were there on a Sunday morning. And in the high school class, I think a couple of the kids, one or two of them went to it, and my cousin's husband, anyway, family member, taught the class. And he was telling me later that he said something. I don't know if he really intended or how much he had thought about it ahead of time, but he said to them, to this group of young people, that I don't remember the number he used, maybe 10 years or 15 years from now, half of you won't be faithful Christians. And that, I guess just from his experience with seeing young people come up through the church, it'd be interesting to know what the number would be here. If we went back for the last 30 years, all the young people that came along, how many of them are now faithful Christians? There's not 100%. And I don't know what that statistic is. But anyway, this was very disturbing to one of the young people there. One of the young ladies who's in the class contacted him, I think the next day. She was very upset. And she wanted to meet with him and talk to him. And she was scared because she said she didn't want to be one of those people who didn't end up being faithful. And so that worry, when he said that, it scared her about herself. And there's really not anything to be frightened about in that because it's up to you. It's a decision you make. It's a commitment. Nothing can come along to knock you off track. In fact, that's some of the promises Jesus gives us. No one can snatch you out of my hand. Nobody can come along and take your faith away from you. Nothing can come along and bulldoze you, you know, onto the wrong track. It's all choices you make. But you can decide at a young age, you can make a commitment and you can make a decision and a choice to say, I'm going to follow the Lord. And what does that look like? Well, we'll look at some of those instructions that Paul gives to Timothy in this letter. In chapter 4, verse 12, he says, let no one despise you for your youth. So in some ways, Timothy was a young man. Now, what is young? Well, it doesn't necessarily mean he was like a teenager. He might have been quite a bit older than that. We don't know how old he was. Youth is kind of relative, as we started out saying. If you're 40 years old and you're playing professional sports, people would say you're old. If you're 40 years old and you're running for president, everybody would say you're young, you know. So it sort of depends on what kind of circumstance we're talking about. I don't know how old Timothy was, but he was a young man in some ways. And a lot of what is written to him was written to him as his role as an evangelist. I'm not going to focus on that tonight. It could be that some of our young people here will be an evangelist one day. That's wonderful. That's a good thing. Or maybe you won't. But I'm going to emphasize, and we're going to look at some passages of instruction that would apply to all young people, whether or not you are an evangelist like Timothy. These instructions are things that would apply to, and in fact, for us old folks, they apply to us too. So really, it will apply to everybody. But it's written to someone who is a young person. So from that point of view, I think it has a special application to young people. So we'll look at these 4 points. Train yourself for righteousness. Be an example. Be respectful and pursue righteousness. And we'll just look at some verses as we go through. First of all, verses 7 and 8. Train yourself. Look at what Paul writes here. Have nothing to do, he tells Timothy, with irreverent, silly myths. Rather, train yourself for godliness. While bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. This is something that everybody will understand. That is that if you aspire to anything worth doing, it's probably going to require some training, some practice. Think of it in terms of athletics. He uses the illustration of bodily training. Think of it in terms of athletics. If you signed up for a sport and you had never played this before. So imagine you've never played just whatever. You haven't ever played organized baseball and you sign up for that. And so you say, I want to be on the team. And well, what normally happens is, especially if you're like a youth level, after you fill out the paperwork and turn your money in, a phone call and a few days later and somebody says, I'm the coach, your son's on my team, and I want you to know that our practices are going to be on Mondays and Thursdays at this field, and, you know, we'll see you. But imagine if they didn't do that. Imagine if there was no practice and no, training. They just said, the first game is Saturday, and I'll bring your uniform to the field. And you show up, and you don't even know how the game is played, and you don't know what the rules are, and you haven't done any kind of training, and you don't know what position you play, and they tell you a position, and you don't even know what that means. That'd be really frightening, and it wouldn't work at all. So in order to be good at it, you've got to have practice. You've got to understand what the rules are. You have to do conditioning. I remember when I played just little league football, even at 11, 12 years old, we'd still get together. It seemed like the first half of the practice was running around in circles around the field, and doing push-ups and sit-ups and holding our legs up and all this stuff, because the coach knew you're going to need to be in better shape than you are now if you're going to do this and be any good at it. And as I understand, as sports go along in age, that conditioning part becomes more and more a part of it. And they're not trying to be mean. They just know what's coming down the road, and you have to prepare now. You can't wait till then to get ready. You have to prepare now for what's coming. But Paul is saying here, bodily exercise and bodily training does have some value to it, but it's only limited to this life. But training in godliness has value in every way, as it holds promise for this life and the life to come. So training in physical training has a place in that it can pay off in this life. It can have benefits in this life. But training in godliness is something that will have a benefit in this life and in the life to come. But I wonder how many young people spend time training for something, but don't spend time training for godliness. So what would it look like to train yourself for godliness, to train yourself for righteousness? Well, it could be as simple as developing a good prayer life. Praying is something that takes practice. Sometimes people haven't ever been in the habit of praying. They're like, I don't even know what to say. It comes with practice. It's something that we have to get in a routine of doing, something we need to get in the habit of doing. We could also think in terms of study and reading and just learning and growing. If you were going to train yourself physically and you were part of a team, the coach would probably not only tell you, okay, you guys need to practice by running, they're probably also going to say, and cut out this and this and eat more of that. And they'll give you some dietary guidelines to go along with that so you can train yourself. And, of course, the same thing is true spiritually. He's talking here in Hebrews to some people who were kind of weak and hadn't been growing. And notice he says, you ought to be teachers by now, but you need someone to go back over the basics again with you. You need milk and not solid food, for everyone who lives on milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness since he's a child. Well, if you're a child, that's okay to be on the milk. That's what you're supposed to do. You have to start out on the basics. Sometimes people, they want to jump all the way to the very end. I want to know the hard stuff. Well, before you can go to that, you got to learn these basics. But after you can't stay there. You can't just get stuck on and be satisfied with elementary school level understanding. And nobody can sort of just cram this into your heads. We try. But it's not very effective to just shove things into someone's head. It doesn't stay unless they have an interest in it. Otherwise, I mean, think of all the things that people spend their entire, you know, they go to school for 13 years every day somebody's teaching you something about math or English or whatever, if you don't have an interest in that, you can leave about as ignorant as you started. You know, none of it sticks. But if that's something you're interested in and you want to learn, you can become like a sponge, and it's just a choice we have to make. And the same thing's true of spiritual things. We have to choose to have a hunger and a thirst for that and grow on from these milk things to more mature things. He says in verse 14, solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. Notice that it takes practice. What do we have to do practice here? To distinguish good from evil. Here's a classic trait of someone who's spiritually immature. They say, well, I don't see what's wrong with that. I don't get that. I don't see what the big deal is. I don't know why I shouldn't be able to do that. And maybe somebody who has more maturity would say, we're going to stay away from that. That's not good. But somebody who's not trained in the Word, who hasn't really been growing and learning about the Lord and His ways, they look at things and they have trouble figuring out what's good and bad. They have trouble distinguishing and making choices between what's the right choice here. But it comes with maturity, and it comes with growth, and it comes with moving on and having the right kind of spiritual diet. And that's a way that we can train ourselves for godliness. It takes practice, and it takes experience, and it takes maturity. And as, you know, as parents and as older folks, spiritually and in every other sense, you kind of understand when people are immature. I mean, hopefully we should have a lack of knowledge. But you shouldn't, as a young person, be satisfied to stay in that place. You should want to grow, and you should want to learn more, and you should want to have a better and better knowledge and understanding. Just like if you were, if your passion was a particular sport, you would want to learn everything you could about that. I mean, you would sort of dwell on that and watch people play and learn about how the pros do it and maybe read articles about it, and you would learn the finer points, and you would see them doing something. I want to learn that trick. I want to learn how he did that. I want to be able to do this. And you aspire not to just stay at like a peewee level, but if that's something you are passionate about, you aspire to be the best you can be in that. And the same way, if you're going to be a devout Christian, we would have that same desire and aspiration to grow and to master these things, to learn everything you can learn about it. And it takes time. It takes practice. But that's a commitment that can be made at an early age. Another thing that he writes to Timothy is that he needs to be an example to others. And if you do those first things we talked about, this will come naturally. Notice verse 12 of chapter 4. Let no one despise you for your youth, but set the believers an example in speech, conduct, love, in faith, and in purity. Sometimes people feel like they're overlooked because of their youth. And it could be that someone is overlooked because of their youth. Maybe you feel like people don't really, they kind of forget about you because you're a young person and they're thinking about adults. But I've also found in my experience and in the experience of others that people generally treat someone as old as they act. So if people are, you know, if they're engaged and they're able to do and they're interested, for the most part, people will recognize that and they'll treat you as mature as you are. I remember there was a quote from a tight end for Alabama, Michael Williams, a few years back, when T.J. Yeldon was playing. T.J. Yeldon was a freshman. He was having an outstanding freshman career. But as a freshman, a true freshman, he was getting a lot of playing time. And somebody asked them what they thought about this freshman playing. And, Michael Williams said, if you're good enough, you're old enough. So it's like, it doesn't really matter. Nobody cares if you're 18 or 19 or 20 or 21. If you're able to do it, you can play, and they're going to put you out there. And that's usually the way that it is. If youth is not going to hold you back. And Paul says, Timothy, don't let your youth hold you back. So number one, don't let people just ignore you because you're young. But also don't use being young as a crutch to say, well, nothing's really expected of me. I'm a young person. This is for the grown-ups. No, you can join in too, and you can be involved, and you can be active, and you can be an example that others can look to follow. Let's notice the things that he says you can be an example in. First of all, he says be an example in speech. Paul writes to the Ephesians, let no corrupting talk. This word corrupting, if I understand it right, is similar to our word for rotten. like garbage. Think of garbage. So don't have garbage coming out of your mouth, is what he's basically saying. Not things that are rotten, but only such as good for building up, as fits the occasion. It may give grace to those who hear. Unfortunately, very often, there is a, young people might have one way they talk around their young friends and another way they talk around adults. But we need to think about that you can decide as a young person to be an example to other people, even in the way that you talk, even in your speech, in your conduct. I don't know if they do conduct marks anymore. That probably didn't even make sense to you guys. You ever heard of conduct? Okay. Well, I remember there was a conduct grade on our report cards. You guys get conduct grades? Okay. Well, for some reason I thought that was a thing of the past, but I'm glad. But what does it mean to conduct is how you behave, right? And, a lot of times that was my lowest mark when I was a kid. Unfortunately, it's, you know, not a good thing, but conduct is behaving yourself. And you, as a Christian, your conduct should be your best mark. I mean, a Christian young person should be the best behaved young person. It should just follow that if you're following the example of Jesus, that you're going to be someone who behaves yourself in a respectful and not in a childish way. You walk the walk. Paul writes to the Thessalonians, you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God. How early can you start doing that? When you're old enough to understand what I'm saying, you can start doing that, right? If you're old enough to read that and understand what it says, you're old enough to start living by it, which means even as a young person, you can start walking in a manner worthy of God. You can make it your goal to live a life that reflects the glory of our Creator. He says, be an example in speech, in conduct, be an example in love. I think this is a challenging one for young people. It seems like it's natural at a young age for the world to revolve around you in your own mind. That, at least, that was the way it was for me. That it was hard, it didn't come naturally to think about other people. Now as you get older, hopefully you start to realize when you get married, you have kids, you have other responsibilities, like the world does not revolve around you. Hopefully we figure that out. It's a disaster when people get to be adults and they hadn't figured that out yet. Some adults don't figure that out. But hopefully as you grow up, you figure out that the world doesn't revolve around you. But as a kid, sometimes the world revolves around you. And so love is understanding the world doesn't revolve around you and that there's other people who you can be concerned about and you can show compassion to and you can do things for. Seeing people who are in need, seeing people who you can cheer up, seeing people that you can show kindness to, that's part of love, and it involves being aware of other people besides yourself and acting for them. That this comes with maturity, but you can, even as a young person, you can be loving and you can be compassionate and merciful to the people around you. That may be extra difficult, but that is something for sure that we can do. Here's an example. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant. It's not rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. Have you ever heard that challenge? There's a challenge where you read this passage, but you put your name in there and see how well it fits. So instead of saying love or charity, you would say, Eric is patient and kind. Eric does not envy or boast. And you can put your own name there and read that and see if it, hopefully it describes our life. It's a tall order to live up to that. But that's, as Jesus told us, first and second commands, the most important number one and number two are love and love, right? So if we don't get that right, as Paul says in this passage, you can do everything else in the world. If you're missing the love part, it's all for nothing. So we have to get this love part right, and we can do that even as a young person. He says, be an example in faith as well. Of course, faith is what it's all about. Faith is believing in what can't be seen. It is believing in that enough to act on it. And faith is something that can be passed down. Remember that Paul remembered that Timothy's faith started out in his grandmother and his mother and now dwelled in Timothy himself. It came down through the mother's side. And that's encouraging too for the moms here, that you can have such an impact on your daughter and on her son, in this case, a grandchild, that faith can pass along. But as a young person, you can choose to let the faith of your parents and grandparents dwell in you as well. Or you can choose to reject that. Because one thing that we learn is that none of us have the ability to, again, forcefully inject these things into anybody else. If we could, we would, but you can't. We all have to choose it. Everybody has a choice to make. Am I going to have the faith of my fathers, the faith of my mother and grandparents, or am I not? Am I going to turn away from those things? Be an example in purity. You know, a great thing about youth is innocence and purity. So you think about it. In fact, Jesus, remember when he was trying to illustrate purity, he found a child and he said, hey, this is what you need to do. You got to turn and become like children to follow me. And I think in a lot of ways, of course, that would be humility and purity and innocence. That's what following Christ is supposed to be like. As a child, that's pretty easy in a young age because you're already there. But when you lose that innocence and when you lose those, you know, those things and you experience sin, you begin the lifelong process of striving for purity and working to purify yourself and to get rid of impurities in your life, whether it's impure thoughts, impure speech, impure habits, impure conduct. We should be an example in purity. Don't let your heart be defiled by the filth of sin. He says, keep your heart with all diligence or vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. So if we want to determine the course of your life, it's very important that we guard our heart, because what you allow into your heart is what determines the kind of person you're going to be. And if you want to know and you want to make sure, I don't want to be one of these other kind. I want to be a good person. I want to be somebody who is a child of God. Well, start early by guarding what goes into your heart and guarding what you allow into your mind, because that's where the springs of life are flowing from. They come from there. And so those are choices that you can make even at a young age. Another point he tells him is to be respectful. As a young person, this is a word we talk about in our house all the time. And it's not a word Sarah and I invented. I'm sure our kids may think that we made that word up because we, but no, I'm sure they know better. But it's not a word that we made up. It's not a concept that we invented. This is something that you find in scriptures, that young people need to be respectful. And Timothy is told, even as an evangelist, don't rebuke an older man, but encourage him like a father. Younger men as brothers, old women as mothers, younger women as sisters, in all purity. So even as Timothy was interacting with these people, he had to be respectful and recognize and treat them with respect. And he says, treat the older men like fathers and the old women as mothers, which assumes something. It assumes that Timothy would know how to treat his mom and his dad. As Paul, of course, says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you, that you may live long in the land. Hey, you want your life to go pretty good? One way to have things go in your favor is to obey and honor your parents, because the promise that goes along with that is that life's going to be better. And you can see this in other people if you can't see it in your own self. You watch somebody that is disobedient and disrespectful and see how that works out for them. And you watch somebody that's obedient and respectful and see how that works out for them. Life is better for you when you are obedient and respectful. You're going to have a better experience, even as a teenager, as a, you know, whatever age. If you're obedient and respectful, things are going to go better for you than if you're not. And, but he here uses that to tell Timothy, now you treat other people with that same respect that you would treat your mom and dad. And he says, treat your peers like brothers and sisters. This is assuming as well that you would be kind and respectful to your brothers and sisters. So he could say, you know, maybe you shouldn't treat them like your brothers and sisters, depending on the kind of relationship you have with brothers and sisters. But hopefully we understand there he means that in a positive sort of way. And I want to say, too, that I believe that our young people here do a good job of this. I've been impressed with the respectfulness of the young people here. And we just need to keep that up. And realize that it applies in life in general. It's good to be respectful to your brothers and sisters here and those people here. Well, how do we treat coaches? How do we treat teachers? How do we treat the boss at work? How do we treat other people in our life? A young Christian person should be someone who is a respectful person. And then finally, he says, pursue righteousness. This last one has to do with your aim in life, what you are pursuing. People talk about, I'm pursuing a degree. You're pursuing this, you're pursuing this. It's what you're chasing after. So what are you chasing after in life? For a lot of people, what they're chasing after is money. So the question is, well, how much does this degree pay? How much can you make by doing this thing? And so the game of life is to figure out how to play your cards just right to maximize your income. And that's what being successful is. Because if you're successful, you have used your talents and your opportunities and your education, and you've done all that just perfectly to arrive at the pinnacle of success, and you'll be independently wealthy and all those things. And that's what a lot of people say that life is really all about. But notice what Paul says instead to Timothy in this letter. Those who desire to be rich will fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and have pierced themselves with many pangs. So as a young person who's looking out at an unknown future and what does the future hold for me, I think Paul would say to us that if your number one goal is making money, it's going to be a dangerous road ahead. It's probably going to lead you down the wrong path in life. If that is your number one thing, is a love of money, if that's what you're driven by, that love of money is not going to drive you closer to the Lord. It's not going to help you be a righteous, godly young person. It's going to present you with a lot of temptations. And it doesn't mean you can't be successful, by the way. There are a lot of Christian people, in fact, throughout the Bible, you go back to Abraham, was wealthy. A lot of people in the Bible who were God-fearing people, even God-fearing young people like Joseph and Daniel, ended up being very successful people. The key difference is, what's your aim and where's your heart and where's your love? If your treasure, if what you really love and what you're craving is the power and the money, that's a very dangerous goal to have in life. But if you're just trying to serve the Lord, you might be very successful and you may be able to use those things to God's glory, as so many have. But instead, what should your aim be? He tells Timothy, as for you, O man of God, flee all that. Pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, gentleness. People want to know, what degree are you pursuing? What's your goals? What do you want to do? These are some goals. Righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, gentleness. And as a young person, if you're pursuing those things, you're going to be running in a different direction than the rest of the crowd. This is not what everybody else is pursuing. They're not running after those things. That's not what their life is about. That's not what they're passionate about. So if you're chasing after that, you're not going to be running in the same direction as everybody else. A lot of people, they'll say they go to church. They'll say that they'll say they're a Christian, and maybe they are, but that's not their driving passion. That's not what their pursuit of life is. It's just something they do on Sunday for a couple of hours, but it doesn't define them. But for someone who wants to be a devout Christian, this is their driving factor in their life. This is their number one priority. And it's what they are chasing. It's what they are pursuing. And if we pursue righteousness, we are told by Jesus that if we hunger and thirst for it, we shall be satisfied. You don't have to worry. You could say, I want to be a surgeon. And some people, they make it. Some people say, that's my goal. And they get there. Some people say, I want to play professional sports. And they make it. But there's other people who that's their goal and they pursue it and they give it 100% and they can't get there. They fall short. They couldn't cut the classes. They didn't make the cut. They didn't get accepted to the school. They didn't make the team. They, in spite of all their efforts, they couldn't do it. And that's sad in worldly ways. But here's a great thing about righteousness. You can decide right now, I'm going to pursue righteousness, and there is nothing that can hold you back. You can be absolutely guaranteed you can have it. Jesus says, if you seek, you will find. If that's your goal, you'll get it. If you hunger and thirst for it, you'll be satisfied. You're not going to be told, well, you weren't quick enough. You didn't have enough vertical leap. You weren't smart enough to make the, you didn't score high enough on the test. You didn't get accepted into the program. You know, none of that applies to the things that matter the most in life, spiritual things. You can set that as your goal and you can know for a fact that nothing's going to stop you from getting it. You can achieve that because the Lord is going to be sure of it. He's going to work with you and through you. Timothy was a special young man. Listen to how Paul describes him when he writes to the Philippians. He says, I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, that I too may be cheered by news of you. I have no one like him who will be genuinely concerned for your welfare, for they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. Timothy was an unusual young man. Paul said, I don't know anybody else like him, and I would love to be able to send him to you. And Paul just has the most great things to say. And I will say that it is unusual to see in a young person a passion and a desire to seek and serve the Lord. But that is a choice that each of you have to make. If that's what you want to be, nobody will, you know, that's something nobody can do for you and nobody can stop you. That is a choice that each of us can decide at whatever age. And for those of us who are a little bit older, maybe you've been reminded of some things that we all can get distracted and turn away from and just sort of kind of start idling along. But we want to be the same type of man of God that is passionately seeking after the Lord's things. That somebody could say, you know, there's somebody that's following the Lord. There's somebody who has put their priorities in God first and foremost. That's something that we all can and must choose to do. Perhaps there's someone here tonight who needs to make that commitment to say, you know what? That's what I want to be. I want to be a child of God. I want to be a Christian. And I'm ready to make that commitment. If that's you and you're ready to do that tonight, let's do it. We've got everything here we need, and we'd be glad to assist you. We'd be thrilled to end the day on that note. If we can pray with you, if we can help you in any way, let us know while we stand and sing.